Okay, we're learning the first parak of Tehillim, and we're also viewing it in the context of an introduction to all of Tehillim, of which this is part two. And this week we're going to examine on a different aspect of the first parak, the first chapter. And we'll begin by repeating the question that we began with last week, which is that the very first sentence is Ashrei ha'ish asher lo halach batzas v'shoim. Fortunate is the man, or praiseworthy is the man, who did not go in the plans of the wicked, b'derech ha'toyim layomot, didn't stand in the path of the sinners, b'moshev leitzim lo yoshev, didn't sit in the gatherings of the cynics. And we find this peculiar trope, what in Hebrew we call the tamim, those are punctuation marks that are used in the Masorah and the tradition of how to read the psukim. And there's a very strange punctuation of a psik. A psik is a line, a dividing line, and it appears after the third word of the sentence. So that in essence, all that we have before that dividing line in English is, fortunate is the man that. It doesn't say anything about what he did or what he didn't do. Fortunate is the man that, period. That's where the first dividing line comes in, and that's a psik. It's a drastic division. And then it continues. He didn't join the wicked, he didn't join the sinners, he didn't join the cynics. But it's strange that besides for the larger message, or before you encounter the larger message of the things that he avoided, the things that he did well, and what a person like this should do, how he should behave, but the very first thing is that fortunate is the one that is. The first thing is to be. So what does this mean exactly? The man that is. So let's begin our exploration of an aspect of this, a key aspect of this, by looking at the second pasuk, which talks now about what this person should do. Last week we concentrated on the first pasuk, what he shouldn't do, and we showed how avoiding those things protected his power of speech and enables this person to then be the kind of poet that can write this book and that this book is about. But this time, let's look at his explanation of the positive side. He said, what do you do? Key, but, and again, there's that same psik dividing it, but, and stop. Not to be that type of person, but again, it's very similar really to that first dividing line. It doesn't even contain a complete thought. Key, but again, what it seems to be saying is, fortunate is the man that is a certain way. That's more important than all the things that he's going to do or not do. Fortunate is he for being that is. And then on the other side it says, what does he do? Key, but that he does. But before you even get to what he does, again, that key also is like that, like asher. So even though key is used to mean but, and so it's used to mean that, it's just like but that, stop again. So the man that is, but he is, he is. And every time we draw a line over there and say, remember what he is, and then proceed. Okay. What does he say? What does he do? Kim b'toras Hashem chafzo. He desires the Torah of Hashem. U'b'toraso, and in his Torah, yegeh, yoyma v'layla. He will engage day and night, but the verb that's used, yegeh, we'll revisit that in a minute. But what it's saying is that he should, this person, the good person, he doesn't go and do the bad things with the bad people. What does he do? He desires the Torah of Hashem, and he engages in it day and night. So the very first principle that we need to examine here is, what is this business of desiring it? The mitzvah is, what's the mitzvah with Torah? The mitzvah of Torah is to study it. Right? Now the actual phrase that in the book of Yeshua, the phrase that he uses to teach the mitzvah of Torah is the second phrase of this pasuk. Uvisaraso yege yomam v'layla. The second half of this pasuk beis is almost the identical phrase of the mitzvah. The mitzvah to learn Torah is v'hagisa b'yomam v'layla. You should study it day and night. And the second half of the pasuk that King David says that this person does and should do is that he studies Torah day and night. So the second half of the pasuk is almost word for word from the mitzvah of learning Torah. But yet he doesn't begin from there. He begins from a different place. Before he ever gets to doing the mitzvah of learning Torah, he says a prerequisite. In order to arrive at the mitzvah of learning Torah, he tells you, ki im b'Torah Hashem cheftzo. He should desire the Torah. Before you even get to the point where you do what the mitzvah is to study it day and night, and that he wants you to do that. And the second half he tells you, you need to get there. But before that, where does he want you to go? Where does this great person that he's describing, before he ever gets to the mitzvah of learning Torah, he begins with a premise that he desires the Torah first. First he desires it, then he gets to the mitzvah. It's a very strange idea. You don't really usually find that you have to desire a mitzvah before you do it. So what is this idea of desiring the Torah first? Now, there's an actual halacha that we learn out of this pasuk, the way that David HaMelech wrote it. He said he should desire the Torah and he should study it. We actually learn out a halacha from there. We learn out a law about how Torah is studied, and that's in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, the Yud Tes Amud Aleph. In the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, it says that from this pasuk we learn out a principle that Amar Rav Ein Adam Lomed Torah Elam Imakim Shaliba Chofetz. A person only studies Torah from a place that he desires. So if, let's say, you're living in a certain city and the yeshiva in that city is not to your liking, but you visit a yeshiva in a different city and that's the one that you like, so you go there. Or, not only that, but it also, he goes on and says further, that he should only study from a teacher that he desires. But in particular, we also use it that in the text as well, that you decide what you want to learn. Now today, for the most part, a fellow goes to yeshiva and the yeshiva tells him we're learning Kedushin, so he learns Kedushin. But essentially the basic pure halacha is that the fellow shows up to the yeshiva and says, I want to learn Shabbos. I say, well, we're not learning Shabbos. No, but I want to learn Shabbos. So really, according to the halacha, they have to accommodate him. He wants to learn Shabbos, he gets to learn Shabbos. And the Rebbe has to make himself available to him to teach him Shabbos. Why? Because that's what he wants to learn. And the Gemara tells a story like this. Levi v'Reb Shimon b'Rebbe, Yasvi kamei de Rebbe. Levi and Reb Shimon, who was the son of Rebbe. Rebbe was the one who compiled the Mishnayos. So his son and his student Levi was sitting in front of him. And the Kapotsky Sidra, they had just finished learning one subject. So now, they were looking for a new subject to learn. Selek Sifra. Kapotsky Sidra means they had been reading Psukim. And Selek Sifra means they finished a book. So they need to start something new. So Levi Yom Elisa Mishle. Levi says, I want to learn Mishle. Reb Shimon Rebbe Yom Elisa Tillim. Reb Shimon, the son of Rebbe, said, I prefer to learn Tillim right now. There was a question, what should they learn? Should they learn Tillim or should they learn Mishle? So, Kafi Levi Va'isa Tillim. So, Rebbe he forced Levi to learn Tehillim like his son, like Rebbe's son wanted to learn. And there's a question how he was able to force him, but the basic understanding is because he's to teach his son, he has two mitzvahs. There's a mitzvah to teach every Jew, and there's a mitzvah to teach your son. To teach the student, there's only one mitzvah. So when there was a, came to a vote, so he went with his son. But anyway, so he's teaching Tehillim. To Levi, who really wants to learn Mishlei. But they got outvoted, whatever, he lost, so they're teaching him Tehillim. So they open up the Tehillim, and they read the second pasuk right in the beginning. It says, Kimotu Hacha, Kiyim B'Torah Hashem Chavtzi. It says right away in the second verse of the first chapter of Tehillim, what did it say? That he desires the Torah. So Rebbe says, Levi says to Rebbe, he says, if that's the case, I'm off the hook. I can get up and leave now. I don't have to stay anymore. Because you're learning Tehillim, and I wanted to learn Mishlei. So I didn't desire today to learn Tehillim. I desired to learn Mishlei. So I'm not obligated to stay. Right? On the contrary. I'm supposed to learn what I desire. If you can't make yourself available to me because you have a conflict, so I'll go elsewhere and study. So what do we see? That even though the primary authority always in all your studies of Torah is always the Rebbe, that you have to make yourself subservient to the teacher in every kind of a way, and in order for Torah to be studied, the teacher has tremendous authority and respect, and it's equivalent of a parent. Or sometimes when there's a conflict between a parent and a teacher, the teacher actually wins if a teacher of Torah, like the Mishnah says in Bava Metzia. But still, despite all this tremendous power and authority that's vested in the teacher of Torah, but when it comes to what you want to learn, you're the boss. You come first. So if you say, no, I want to learn this other subject, the Rebbe says, I'm sorry, I can't teach you that other subject now because I have prior commitments to the subjects that I'm learning. So I demand that you should learn what I want to teach. You see, you don't have to comply with that demand. I'm sorry, it's nice that you want to teach me Mishlei and that you're available, but unfortunately I'm in the mood to learn Tehillim, so I'm going to learn Tehillim. So all the Rebbe's authority that applies in every other area, but there's one area where he loses and the student wins, which is what I want to learn. Why? Because we learn it out of an actual halacha from this pasuk that it matters what I want to learn, my desire counts. That's first. And if you can't accommodate my desire, then I'll learn elsewhere. So what is this tremendous power, specifically when it comes to learning Torah, that you get to choose? You're the boss. You're more powerful than the Rebbe. It doesn't matter. They're telling you, listen, I'm your Rebbe. This is what I say you need to learn. This is what I say I want to teach you. Say, Rebbe, I'm sorry. I love you. I respect you. But I want to learn this. That's my desire. And the Torah says, I learn what I desire. So they dramatize it with this story that he sat him down and he made him learn Tehillim. And then he got to the second pasuk. He says, no, you just got me off the hook. But this needs to be understood. Here's the thing that really is not part of the mitzvah, like we said. The mitzvah is to study. And the David HaMelech puts it before the mitzvah. And not only that, it gets to define the mitzvah, because if I don't want to study this, I'm studying something else. Even my Rebbe can't make me do differently. Now, there's a very interesting medrash, which maybe we'll can explain tonight as well, about the, and this is certainly a very important part of the introduction to Tehillim, which is that King David made a special prayer to Hashem. And he said, listen, Hashem, I want you to consider learning Tehillim like learning Halacha. It's kind of a strange thing. There's all kinds of other poetry that's part of Torah. You have the Song of Songs of Shlomo, right? It's a beautiful thing. It's a mitzvah of Torah if you learn it. But it's not like learning halacha. Halacha is something different, right? But David HaMelech is specifically, he says, Tehillim, he says, Hashem, please, I want you to treat Tehillim like somebody learned halachas. He gives the example of Nagahim and Olas, the laws of leprosy and the laws of dead body and the tumah that comes out of it. So those are very, very complex laws, especially with the building structures of the laws of the dead body. It's extremely complex and detailed and profound halachas. And here to say tilim, you know, you can sit and say tilim. It's the poetry, right? You recite it. And David said, Hashem, please, I want you to give people reward for reciting my poetry of tilim specifically, as if they learned halachas in depth. And some even want to say that according to this, tilim is different than other things, because you could, usually the written Torah you don't read at night. The written Torah you read by day, and at night you learn Gemaras and things like that, Medrashim, things that are from the oral Torah, Torah Shabbat. That's usually the tradition. But since King David asked that his written Torah should be considered like learning Gemara in depth, so it shouldn't be a problem doing it at night either, according to that. Yeah, Reb Chaim Volozhin is a little bit of a skeptic. He says, it doesn't say in the Medrash if Hashem answered him. But I would think that the presumption certainly is, I think on this one we have to vote with the Hasidim, that the presumption is that Hashem agreed. I mean, because otherwise the Medrash is strange. He went and he asked this request. The Medrash doesn't mention Hashem answering. I would assume if it doesn't mention, it's because he said yes. If he said no, the Medrash would have to say he said no. But if the Medrash just says he requested it, we assume that the request was answered. So this is a very interesting thing about Tehillim, that he says, look at Tehillim like the person learned halachas in depth. What's the idea of that? Okay. Now, this is a very interesting thing about this particular verb that they choose to describe learning Torah. Now, Hashem does it already himself when he told Yehoshua, you should learn Torah day and night. He said, v'hagisabo. So he used the same verb. And now King David, when he talks about Asher Ha'ish, this wonderful human being, the height of humanity, so he says, how does he do? He's doing Torah day and night, but the phrase that he uses is yege. Now yege is a word that sometimes means thinking, higoyen, thinking, and sometimes it means speaking. To the point where you actually have in the Mepharshim right on the spot in Tehillim over there, Rashi says it means thinking in Torah day and night, and the Metzudas says, well, sometimes it means thinking, sometimes it means speaking. The Radak says that according to the simple meaning it means speaking, but according to a more in-depth meaning it means thinking. So they're going back and forth, thinking and speaking. But the fact is that viewing it from above, so to speak, as sort of an overview, is the way to define the question is, why use this word that is a bridge word that has in it both the implication of thinking and speaking? Right? They're choosing an interesting word that whether the foremost meaning here is speaking or the foremost meaning here is thinking, but they picked a word. If you want to say speaking, you can say yadaber, and I realize that Tehillim is poetry, but first of all, Yeshua is not poetry, and Hashem told it to Yeshua also. The original halacha uses this word, v'hagisa. So why are they using this peculiar word that has in it the meaning of thinking and the meaning of speaking? Okay. Now, in the beginning, let's go back to the first pasuk. What does it say in the first pasuk about this terrific person? What does he do, this wonderful person? And the Gemara we learned last week said that the prototype of this was Avraham Avinu. All right, so what does the wonderful person do? Lo halach b'atzas v'shoyim. He doesn't go in the plans of the wicked. B'derech ha'toyim la'amot. He doesn't stand in the path of the sinners, and he doesn't sit among the cynics. So they make three levels here. Now you could say that they're three synonyms. You know, the plans of the wicked, the path of the sinner, and the gatherings of the cynics. But the Gemara says, no, it's three levels. It means like this. If you start out sitting among the cynics, what ends up happening? Eventually, you end up with the sinners. You start out as a wise guy. And from being a wise guy, you start actually turning into a sinner. And from being a sinner, you turn into a real wicked, evil, creepy person. It's a progression, right? So you have to avoid all three of them. You have to go like they say, marijuana is the gateway drug. So leitzim is the gateway to the other things. If you start out with the hanging around with the wise guys, with the cynics, eventually you get into sinning, and from sinning you turn into a real an ideologue of wickedness. You have a tzatz rishayim. You pick up an ideology, but you believe in wickedness. It becomes a way of life. But it all starts from what? From being among these cynics. So it sets it up in this progression of three levels. And what does it offer as a solution? As a solution, it says, what do you have to do instead? You should desire Torah, and you should study or talk, think in Torah day and night. So is it offering three levels in answer to the three levels, or is it offering two levels in answer to the three levels? So the symmetry of it would seem that if he said there are three bad levels, that he's giving you three good levels. In which case, the way you have to read the pasuk is like this, that the three bad levels are the cynics, the sinners, and the wicked. The three good levels are the desire for Torah, and then studying it by day and studying it by night. Well, day and night, that's not one thing, day and night. But it's really two things, day and night. So there's really a symmetry of three good things instead of the three bad things. Instead of getting involved with cynics, sinners, and wicked people, the desire is for Torah, and Torah by day, and Torah by night. So three things. Three against three. So let's try to explain how that works. Now, the Gemara comes along and says a very interesting thing. The Gemara says, why is it forbidden to go to the Roman circuses where they used to go and watch the gladiators? They would take, these people that they captured, and they would put them out there to fight the lion, see who survived, right? Or like the bullfights that you have today in Spain and Mexico. Why is that forbidden? Halacha is that it's forbidden, and we learn it out from here, because it says over here, Moshe leitzim lo yashav, not to gather with the cynics. That's considered, what does it mean gather with the cynics? It means this type of a thing. That's called gathering with the cynics. There's something very cynical about that whole process of letting human life be devalued to sort of the whim and the gamble of who's going to win, the human being or the bull or the lion. So that it's an act of cynicism. But why is it forbidden? Very interesting how they define it. Not because the thing is, it's evil per se to see that. It doesn't say that. Here's what it says. It says, it's a Moshe of Leitzim. It's an example of sitting among the cynics. V'aleim akos of Omer. And this is what the passage means, what King David means when he says, Ashri ha'isha shelo halach. Fortunate is the man who doesn't do these things. Ki em b'toras Hashem chefzo. But rather, he desires Torah. Halamalata, we see from here, Shedvarim halolu me'vinas adam l'day bitl Torah. If you go to these things, it'll bring you to bitl Torah. Now, it's very interesting. Now, it doesn't say the thing is bad because it's bad. And it also doesn't even say that the thing itself is bitl Torah just because you're wasting time that you could be learning. It doesn't say that. Because the way the mitzvah of Torah is constructed is that you're allowed to do things to eat, to sleep, to relax. You're allowed to have a life. The mitzvah of learning Torah means to learn in the gaps when you're not doing the things that you need to sustain your life. So you're allowed to do recreation that keeps you physically and mentally healthy, That's all permitted. Like going, let's say, to a thing that doesn't have this cynical element to it, going to, let's say, a ball game. Right? Going to a ball game is, it doesn't have this quality to it. Now, you may not be learning during the exact time you're sitting at the game. So then you have to see not to waste an awful lot of time. It has to be within reason. But as long as you're doing it in a way that, you know, it's a certain amount of entertainment in your life to keep you cheerful and not depressed, impressed, and stressed all the time, and enables you to actually do better within your performance of Torah, all of that is good. But these type of cynical sports that the Greeks created, where they actually put a human life at the expense of this. So an example, as I said today, would be bullfights in Spain and in Mexico, or probably in the United States, even boxing. That would probably fit into this category as well. You have to think about that. But usually a guy doesn't get killed in boxing, but he got beat up. But it's... this is an example of things, and now what's the problem? This, it brings to Bittul Torah. How does it bring to Bittul Torah? We're saying it's not the time that you spent at the actual performance that's the problem, because that you can explain within the context of Torah. So what does it mean it brings to Bittul Torah? So Rashi explains, because the Ozel Lahochi Lav B'Torah Hashem Chefze. When you go to these things, it takes away from the desire for Torah. What did King David say? He said, you don't sit with the cynics, but rather you preserve the desire for Torah, which shows us that what? That these things have within them the quality that they are able to undermine the desire for Torah. They make you less, if you go to a bullfight, you're going to be less of a person who desires Torah. How does that work? What's the understanding of that? Here's a halacha. Again, they were learning from this pasuk, but it's with the insight. The insight is built into the halacha. You know why you can't go to those things? Because when you do that, that undermines the desire for Torah. Now, so on the one hand, we learned in the metaphysical side, he said that, you know what ends up happening if you go to the cynics, eventually you drift to the sinners, and when you are at the sinners, eventually you get to the wicked, right? That was on the metaphysical side, like in terms of good advice. But on the actual, to the point of a halacha, he says, you know, you can't, it's going to attack and undermine that the positive side of the desire for Torah. So this thing that we're trying to understand, what is this business? Before you ever get to the mitzvah of Torah, you have this desire of Torah. But that turns out to be such an important thing that you need to preserve, that you have to even avoid activities that have the capacity of undermining that desire. And specifically, he says that these type of cynical activities, like the Romans used to do, or when they talked about Avram, they gave the example that the Plishtim used to do that too, because you see the Plishtim, when they captured Shimshon, also they made some sport out of him. So to make sport out of the unfortunate and the powerless, that type of a thing, that actually undermines the desire for Torah. How does that work? So, and also, by the way, how come that doesn't affect the actual learning of Torah? That the second part of the pasuk is not the issue, that you have to learn all the time. That's not a problem. You could take the time off. But the problem is it undermines the desire. Okay. Now, one other thing that I should mention. The very interesting thing in the Gemara in Brachas. The Gemara in Brachas asks, how come at the end of davening, when you go back from davening, you say, Yil Ratzon Imri Fi, V'Hegin Livi L'Fanecha, Hashem Tzur V'Goali. On your way back out from davening, you say, listen, Hashem, let the words that I said in the davening, let them meet with your will. So, and the things that we're thinking about, you're my Redeemer. How can we say that at the end of davening? Because it says it in Tehillim after the first 18 chapters. So it's a remez that you should say it after 18 brachas. Right? That's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, wait a second, there's a problem with that. The problem is that it says that after 19 chapters. It doesn't say it after 18 chapters. So now we know that the Yidda later bracha also to make it the 19th bracha. But the fact is that if you're saying you're supposed to say it because it's after 18 chapters, but the problem is it's after 19 chapters, so the Gemara answers no. That this opinion holds that the first two chapters in Tehillim are really one. And when you look inside, it looks like the first two, if there's any two chapters that have the least to do with each other in the whole world, it's the first two chapters. Why? Because in the beginning he's saying, you know, it's really wonderful to be the type of person that doesn't hang around with bad guys, and instead you're sitting and learning. Right? That's what the first parak is about. What's the second parak about? What's the second chapter of Tehillim? Why are the goyim getting all excited and angry, and they're making these bad plans against the Jewish people, and they're making an attack against Hashem, and they're making an attack against Mashiach, and they want to bring down Hashem's power and Mashiach's power, and Hashem is going to have to get involved and save the Mashiach. Now Rashi says that even though it says the word Mashiach, the anointed, so Rashi says the rabbis say it means Mashiach of the future. And he says he thinks that on a simple reading it means King David himself. But anyway, so the first chapter is all about, you know, don't be with the bad guys, sit and learn. All of a sudden, the second chapter is about in the time of Mashiach, the guy we're going to attack, they want to undermine Hashem's kingship in the whole world, and we're going to have to resist them, right? And then the Gemara says, oh, it's really one chapter, the two of them. That's why he holds that it's after 18 chapters, because the first and second is really one chapter. These two things seem to be the furthest imaginable things from each other. Now, last week we did explain that there is a connection to Mashiach already in the first chapter, so we could understand a little bit how we got into Mashiach in the second chapter right away. But still, it seems to be completely, radically different subjects to go from, you know, it's good to sit and learn and not hang around with bad guys, to, oh, by Mashiach's time, the Goyim are attacking, we're going to have to dive and Hashem's going to have to save us. It doesn't seem at all to be connected subjects. And that they said, oh, that's one subject. That, according to that opinion, it's one chapter. So how do you understand that? So we want to go back to a very important principle that we use, that we talk about the fact in davening, we see that in the morning davening, we seem to be talking about kavod. We say, Hashem, you know, He created the lights, He made the sun, and we say, what? How do we describe that? Tov, Hashem, who is good, Yatzar, He created, kavod, honor, l'shmot, His name. Hashem created honor. So that's what we say in the morning to describe the creation, the light, all of that is its honor. At night, when we're talking about taking the lights in, putting them back, so we say that Hashem, He does it in shifts, b'mishmar Hashem k'ritzono, according to His will. Rather than talking about honor, we talk about that it's according to His will. Also, even later, at the end of Ma'ariv, at the end of Shachris, we talk about the splitting of the sea. So in Shachris, we say, Shir Chadash, Shir Chugulim, Shim Chasvasayam, Yachak Kulam, Hodavim, Lichu Armam. In the morning, you say that they sang a new song, they made Hashem the king. At night we say, "Umalchusa beratzon kibla aleihem." They accepted Hashem's kingdom beratzon, with will, with ratzon. So, in the beginning of, we talk about Hashem setting up the lights according to His will, and then we say that people accepted His kingdom with will. So, at night there's a big focus on the subject of will, and whereas in the morning the focus is rather on kavod. Now we know the very important metaphysical principle is that Hashem basically created the world for two main purposes. One is for His ratzon, and one is for His kavod. One is that His will should be done, and the other is for His honor. Now, at the end of the Avos to Reb Nosson, and the end of Perkei Avos and the Braisa part. So they give you those two things. It says, "Koma Shabara Kadosh Baruch Hu Ba'alam El Baral El Chvoid." Everything he created for His honor. Shenem, as it says, "Kol Nikri B'Shmi El Chvoid Yibrosif." Hashem said, "Whatever I made, it's called in My name, and it's for My honor." That's the principle of covenant. And then the next thing, Amram Chanani Ben Akashi, Rotza Kadosh Baruch Hu Lezakis Es Yisrael. Hashem wanted that the Jewish people should do well. The Fiva Chirbalhem Torah Mitzvahs. Therefore, He gave them a lot of Torah and a lot of mitzvahs to do. He gave them a lot of examples of ways that He's able to have His will come out. Rotza, He wanted for that to happen, and He gave them mitzvahs to keep His will. And Shenema Hashem Chofetz Aman Tzidkoi, because He wants that the things He says should come out, and that the Jews should be righteous. So He made a big Torah for that purpose. So our tradition is that these are the two principles. They put these as the last two statements in the Book of Avos, which is all about life. The last two principles are that Hashem created the world for honor, and He created the world for His will to be kept. Ratzon and Kavod, those are the two important principles that are the basis, the purpose of the world. Rabbi Yashar Ber Soloveitchik, he brings that someone said to Rabbi Chaim Britzker that Hashem made the world for Kavod, and he said, no, Hashem made the world for Ratzon. But the tradition is both, that the world, the two functions are Ratzon and Kavod. Now, what are we finding in the davening? We're finding that the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, when they set up the davening, they focus in the morning davening on Kavod, and in the evening davening on Ratzon. Right? In the morning davening, they're focused on the honor, and the evening davening, they're focused on the will. Now, if you think about it, you realize that it's really a very logical thing, that they understood that within the creation of the world, which is for Ratzon and for Kavod, but the world is divided into two parts, Yom and Laila, day and night, that Yom, the day, connects more to the idea of Kavod, and Laila connects more to the idea of Ratzon. Why? Well, first of all, let's say if Hashem wants Kavod, obviously, if you can see better, if He wants honor, if you can see better what He made, if you stand, you go, and you see the color of the ocean, right? You can see it by day. The ocean looks pretty big at night too, but you don't see the color. You don't see the color of the sky. You don't see most of the things. So you can't give Him as much honor by night as by day, because He gets the honor when you see what He has. Right? So during the day when He's showing it, then He's getting more honor. In the same way a person, even the person who does good things during the day, people see Him doing it, He also gets more honor. So Hashem gets more honor for His creation, and people are doing things more in public, the workplace, and the things they do where people are seeing them, more people see them, more honor. Right? At night, where it's darker, Hashem gets less covered. So the things that are, and the people even who are doing what He wants to do, what He wants them to do, are also getting less covered. But the focus is more on doing His will, because even though nobody's looking, right? If in the terms of the strength of having His will be done, it's more powerful the fact that His will gets done at night. Because His will gets done by day when everybody sees you, so you're from because everybody sees you. That's a lesser showing of that God's will is paramount. But in the dark, right? You say in the morning a person should fear God when it's revealed. He should have to fear God in secret. But by night it's more a secret. By day the light is shining, you're out among people. By night it's darker and you tend to be home. So the focus by day is a greater proof of God's honor. And also the man who engages in God in seeking God's honor will get more honor. There's that balance. And by night it's more a focus on doing God's will and a proof that God's will is so powerful that even though nobody's looking, people are still observing it. So that's the greatness of God's will. And in consequence, the person who does God's will even at night, he's able to have his will be carried out more in the reward level, and even in the fact that the children are essentially conceived at night, because your will is able to extend in the night when you're showing more that you do God's will. So those are the two principles of Ratzon and Kavod, and we see that it's in the davening, that in the morning we say, look, the things Hashem created, he gave great Kavod to his name. At night we say that he's rearranging all the things, even in the dark, things you can't even see, Kiritzono, according to his will, because at night we see the power of his will. And then when the Jews accepted his kingdom at night, we focus on the fact that they accepted Malchuso Beratzo. They accepted his kingdom with will. Now, when people violate these two principles, when people are in violation of Ratzon and in violation of Kavod, it tends to work in different ways. The people who are in violation of Ratzon, what do? They, for the most part, are refusing to do his will, right? Ratzon means God's will. The people who are in violation are people who are doing averus. People who are doing sins. They're violating his will. His will is that you shouldn't do these things. They're in violation. His will is you should do certain things. They refuse to do it. So those are people who are fighting against God's will, against his Ratzon. The people who are going against the honor of Hashem, that fits in more with the idea of batala, of just waste, just not doing it, not achieving, is the opposite. Kavod is all the honor and the potential that there is, and like so, the bittul Torah per se, just not learning, dvarim b'talim, talking nonsense, those kind of things that have to do with bittul, that have to do with things not being important, they are more of a contradiction to Kavod than they are to Ratzon, because it's not so much the fact that it's the lack of will, it's that things are not, good things aren't happening, big things aren't happening, it's just, you're making everything, lowering it down to the mundane. That's the opposite of Kavod. Kavod means honor, dignity, special, and they make it ordinary, not special, ordinary. So by the more you pull things down to ordinary, the more that's the contradiction to Kavod. And we saw, for example, we saw the idea in, we learned through this Gemara in the Dharma and the Gemara in Nazir. In one place he talked about the Yetzirah of doing sins, and he called him Rasha. When he addressed that Yetzirah, he said to him, Rasha, what are you making, trying to make me sin for? So he called the Yetzirah the wicked one. But in the other Gemara, where the Yetzirah was just trying to get him to be an empty person and not to achieve, he called the Yetzirah Reka, the empty one. So we spoke about Parashas Naso 2 years ago, that the Yetzirah against God's will is that's the Rasha, right? He wants you to do sins. The Yetzirah against the honor of Hashem is just, that's the Reka. He's the empty one. He just wants you to be a waste, the waste. Okay. But now, what about the lights? This lights we have in our pasuk, we're saying the gateway, the real problem is this kind of lights, this kind of cynic, that if you start with his cynicism, you come to sin, and from sin you come to being thoroughly wicked, right? But it's coming from where? From the cynicism. And we said if you engage in that cynicism, what happens? You lose the desire for Torah, right? Now, which Yetzirah does that fall into? The Yetzirah for this type of cynicism. So you would think that maybe that's just the Yetzirah of Bittul or Batala. Maybe that's just the regular Yetzirah of to waste your time. But no, we said that the way it was all set up is not wasting, the problem is not wasting your time. The problem is creating a certain type of a mindset that's going to take away from the desire to Torah. That the answer really is that even though we know that the breakdown is usually between Ratz and Akava, but there's two things that Hashem is after in the world, His will be done and His honor. But the truth is, there's really a Ratz and Akadma. There's a prior will. There's a Ratzin that precedes both the Ratzin and the Kavod. So that there's really a trilogy. There's really three levels. The two levels that we're familiar with of Ratzin and Kavod, of God's will and God's honor, but there's really a prior will. The prior will is the very will to create. That's the first thing. There are two things that creation divides off into, but there's the essential will to create. That's considered like a prior will, and they actually, if you can make a connection to that will, that means what? Just the idea that it's important that the world should succeed, because Hashem said, "I want there to be a world." Right? So besides for any, already, that's already a breakdown to say His will and His honor. But the very first thing is that the fact that He wants it means we need it to succeed because He wanted it. You have, let's say, somebody you respect, your father, he's making a project, right? And he says, listen, here's my project. I want to make that there should be a Bikur Chayim committee. And by doing that, we're going to do two things. We're going to get publicity for the community because our buses are going to be all over the place and the people will see that we're doing Bikur Chayim. And we're going to accomplish the Bikur Chayim itself. So it's like Ratzin and Kavod, right? He has two goals. He wants the Bikur Chayim itself to be accomplished, and he wants to enhance the reputation of our community as a dynamic and active community, right? So one person says, you know what? I like this plan. That I think we need Bikur Chayim. That's not my issue. I like to do Bikur Chayim. The other one says, this community, I take a lot of pride in it. I'm a very big part of it. I want it to succeed. It's important that this project should succeed. It shows the community is a broader and a more dynamic thing, right? And then there's a third person who says, I want it to succeed because it's my father's project. I'm not even breaking it down to the parts, to the components. It's my father's project, it's valuable to him, I want it to succeed on that basis. So that's really a higher connection even to Hashem. This higher than His will and His honor is the prior will. Hashem wants it, that's important. That's what I need. The very fact that Hashem has a world with a plan, whatever the plan is, the first thing I need to see to it is that it should all work out because it's what he wanted. And that's really where Avram comes in. Where Avram comes in is before you ever get down to the details of what does Hashem want out of the world? The first thing is, the first commitment is, I see that this world has a plan. What's the first thing Avram says? I see that this is a castle, and a castle needs to have a builder. Right? And we have to see what he wants in order to carry it out. But before he ever even started to figure out what does Hashem want, the first thing is to figure out that there's Hashem who wants something. And we have to see to it should work out. Our responsibility is to see to it that that plan is carried out. Now, what's the plan? What does he want? Then we look into it, we find out he wants ruts and he wants covet. So we branch out into the details of it. But the very first, that's the power of Avram, is that first awareness that, you know what? This world is here for a reason. Let's see to it that the reason works out. Now, the second step, it's like Nasim and Ishma, in a sense. I don't want to say it's exactly that, but now let's analyze what is the reason. But Hashem has a reason for this world, that's clear, because he put a lot of effort in. He has a reason, let's make sure it gets carried out. Let's look into it. So even before we even know anything, but just the fact that Hashem wants it, that must be it. That's like the ratzon kadmon. That's a ratzon that precedes the detailed ratzon of what is specific will that he wants, or the specific honor that he wants to get. Just the fact that Hashem made it, I have to see what it should work out. So that's the chiddush of Avram, that Avram goes back all the way to that original place, and he connects at that place. And in that place, here's the real powerful thing, there is no Yetzirah in that place. The whole idea that there's a Yetzirah is only when you start branching out into levels of creation. So we say, well, Hashem said, I want people to do my will, despite the barriers, so I have to put up a barrier. So he makes the Yetzirah that tries to tell you, don't do Hashem's will. He says, I need to get honor from the world, but the honor only is if people overcome barriers. So I have to bank a Yetzirah that tells people, don't give Hashem honor, right? Each of those things needs, it has a Yetzirah, because they're already in the process of trying to get the Ratzon. There's an obstacle of a Yetzirah trying to stop you from doing God's will. There's a Yetzirah trying to stop you from giving God covet. But on this original thing, there really is no Yetzirah. Why? Because this original act of will is before there is anything, really. It's like Hashem before there's a world. And Hashem before there's a world, there can't be any, there's no room for evil over there. There can't be a Yetzirah over there. Because it's only Hashem, it's before anything. It's like the essence of Hashem before he does any creating. So if you make that connection back there, then there is no Yetzirah. You don't even have to, it's not you defeating the Yetzirah. There's no Yetzirah back there. Because if you make, that's what Avram did. The place where Avram connected to Hashem, and he says, I want to see to it, whatever Hashem wants in this world should happen. If you make that connection, the Yetzirah can't even begin, it can't even challenge you. You see the whole Gemara about how the Yetzirah says, we need a test here, we got a test here, because Avram is better. And but the Yetzirah never tests Avram. Hashem tests Avram. But the Satan never tests Avram, right? Why? Because Avram is in a place where there's no Satan over there. He can't even get there. So that's why he respects him, because he's in the higher place. Avram is, the Satan can only challenge the guys who, the question is he doing God's will? He's not doing God's will. He's bringing honor to Hashem? He's not bringing honor to Hashem. Right? But the one who says, I want to connect to the whole idea of making the world, like I want to stand at God's side and make the world along with him. So he's before the Yetzirah even. He precedes the Yetzirah. The Yetzirah has no power over him. So therefore, at the end, so, but the truth is, it's possible to bring the Yetzirah over there. If you bring it along with you, so to speak. You have to import it from someplace else. Because there really is no Yetzirah over there. So that's what he says like this. That the one thing, how do you get to Torah in the purest way is by saying that I have the desire for Torah Hashem. It doesn't even talk yet about my Torah. Later we'll talk about my Torah. I'll study by day and I'll study by night. And we said day and night is two things. Why? Because day is the time of Kavod and night is the time of Ratzon. And when you study the Torah of the day, it's the Torah of enhancing Hashem's Kavod. And you study the Torah of the night, it's the Torah of enhancing God's will. Right? But David says that all of those things, that's a struggle. Yeah, you have to fight the Yetzirah on those fronts. But the way that you can get really command of this is by having the desire for Torah Hashem before it's even down to human beings, so to speak. To have just the desire, I want to connect to the Torah of Hashem. The Torah of Hashem really is before the world. It exists independent of the world. And it's Hashem without the creation. So if I really can do that, if I can be like Abraham and really say, you know what? It's a total commitment, Nasa and Ishmael. I don't even know what it's about. I just know that I want to be together with Hashem in this great project, this enterprise of making this world. So so I need to know the Torah, which is the Torah that's the tool that Hashem uses that, how he expresses his innermost thoughts and he uses to create a world. If you can do that with desire, so that means that you are just like you are connecting to Hashem's original desire of creating the world, and you have your own original desire, so to speak. So you're using the same pattern in your life that you're, before you approach the Torah, even before you get to the mitzvah of doing the Torah. Mitzvahs are ready when there's a world, so to speak. But you get to create your own world. You say, I have the desire, I want to be a person of Torah. And by doing that, you remake yourself. And you get to plan out, so to speak, the creation of yourself as a person. By your desire. The same way Hashem made a world, wow, he starts with a desire. And then there's detail. You get to do that as well. You're connecting to his desire to create, and then you follow that same pattern in the micro, in making establishing yourself as a Torah personality. You envision it, you desire it first, and then the reality follows. Because it's like that, so that's the most powerful thing. There's no Yetzirah. And when you're there, you're the creator. So much so that your Rebbe can't even tell you what to learn. Because then you're before the Rebbe. In every other aspect, the Rebbe's first. When you come to the midst of learning Torah, he's your teacher. So he has all the authority. He has all the responsibility. He gets all the privileges, right? He's your Rebbe. You can't do anything without him. He's before you. He's a generation ahead of you. And the original desire that starts the whole process, nobody's before you. And that desire, you're with Hashem together. You're equal to the Rebbe, before the Rebbe. The Rebbe has no power back there. Because that is a direct connection with Hashem to say, I want to be part of this. I see what Hashem is doing here. He's doing something with the Torah. He's making a whole world. I want to be part of it. I want to connect to this Torah. So that's between you and Hashem. There's no intermediaries. There's no Rebbe who's there ahead of you. And that, you're absolutely, each person is his own complete original beginning. And the whole book of Tehillim, of course, is about originality. It's about poetry. It's about creating. So we're focusing and showing how the original personality is created from the point of view of Torah. How the connection to Torah is done in the ultimate originality in the connection to Torah. Now, how does that get undermined? There's only one way to undermine that, with this kind of cynicism, leitzanus. This leitzanus has the power to undermine the desire. Well, it works at corrupting. That's what its target is. There really is no Yetzirah. The only way that they can pull you out of it, the only way they can pull you down, is they have to try to create an inversion of reality. They have to make a corruption in the culture. They have to bring you up, so to speak. They have to make a society and a lifestyle and a culture. It's a whole effort. Because they have to really change almost the innermost sense of where your humanity is taking you. In order to fight that, they have to work in the basic culture of the society and try to undermine it. So the people who want to eventually get to the point where they can sin and be wicked. So their strategy is that they use this kind of cynicism. And they try, in the literature and in the entertainment, they try to undermine the whole idea that things are important. Right? They take a human being, which should be, the highest value should be human life, and then they throw him in there with the lion, and they say, okay, let's see who gets out. And that's going to be the entertainment. So what are they doing? They're undermining the essence of what human life is. And the whole idea that everything is important and every human life is precious because it's so tremendous. And also the fact that they design it in a way that it's really at whim. It's not just the fact that they put the human being down, but they also try to make it seem that everything is whim. It's all fate. And it's capricious. It can go either way. One day the bull wins, one day the guy wins. And you try a little bit with talent to overcome a little bit, but in the long run, you know, the world is just, it's all chaotic. And by doing that, that's the only way that they can undermine. The whole thing of Abraham is that he looks at the world and says, look, the world is poetry. The world is a pattern, right? And the real, true literature, let's say the really great literature, I mean, even Lavdal, not the Jews, but let's say, you know, what, if it's mostly Shakespeare or Milton, or the ones that were really used literature for greatness, all the literature is always designed to show that things even out in the end. The big, long, elaborate novels of all the generations of people that have showed it in the end, there's a pattern to things, and what goes around comes around, and all of those kind of things that they try to show in a long novel. The whole idea of a long novel was to show that eventually the patterns kick in. You just have to see the bigger picture to see it work out. But how is that corrupted? And especially in our time, in what they call, you know, the postmodern.